יודע יותר ממה שזה תלת מרח מלחם אוף טוב של פי א' רבי ישוע ג'ייקובסון.
Everything ready? Okay. Good morning, Rabbi Sai. Sorry it's been a while since I've been here. It's a schuss to be back. As you might have seen in the entryway to MH, they're selling a sefer that I wrote on vacation halachas. That was the promotional bit. But anyway, when I went to write it, so I wanted to check with Gedolim to make sure I'd included everything I needed to include. Everything is written in there with the consultation of Rabbanim. So I went to Rav Falk, Zatzal, and I said to him, I'm writing a sefer on vacation halachas and Bechlal, the Inyan of vacations. So what should I include? Is there anything that I should be sure not to leave out? So he had a nice quip, a nice little word for me. He said, yes. He said, tell everybody that when they go on their vacation, the thing they should make sure to take with them is their Yiddishkeit. So it's a good little joke, but it's actually a very deep joke. If you look in the Kli Yakar on Parshas Pinchas, you'll see the same idea brought out in a very powerful way. He says, you know, we have a mitzvah to make war, to make trouble for Midian, Moab. So the Kli Yakar says there's an interesting stira in why. What are we after them for? So he says it's a stira between the Pasuk and Devarim and a Medrash. And he has a beautiful yeshuv. So he says the Pasuk and Devarim says because they didn't bring us bread and water. So there's a certain cruelty. You have people traveling, they need what to drink and what to eat, and they say, we're not providing. You can, you know, take care of yourselves. So that's a terrible midah. But the Medrash says, well, they did something else. It says they entrapped us with Znus and with Avodah Zorah. They got their young women to try to entice us. They tried to get us to serve the Baal Peor. And it was very, very heavy things. So which one was it? So listen to what the Kli Yakar answers. He says it was a very, very deep and evil plan. The two were related. How do you get a person to do the Isurim Chamurim? Well, listen to this chap. They said, we know that travelers, this is the Lashon of Kli Yakar, you can look it up afterwards if you want. Travelers, when they travel, they get tired and hungry, and they start to make bad choices. So it was really a sinister plan. It's not just that we're being cruel, we're bringing them to the matzav of being tired and hungry travelers, so that we can then present them with Averis Chamuras, and they'll start to make bad choices. Lashon is, people start to make bad decisions about, let's say, kashrus that comes to their hand. Before they know it, they'll be matter things that they would never normally eat. And anybody who's been stuck, a 12-hour flight, even 8-hour flight, and the stewardesses come and say, we're very sorry, Mr. Yid, but the kosher food didn't make it on the flight. So he's now looking at, he just hit 2 hours in the airport, now probably 3 hours. He gets on a flight. He knows he's got 4, 5, 6 hours on this plane. He's going to be drinking, I don't know, water and maybe a Coke. And he's thinking, and then by the time he gets out, it's going to be another 2 or 3 hours. He's a bit hungry and he's been running around. So all of a sudden, the peanuts start to look very appealing. And he thinks, well, what's in a peanut anyway? What's the problem with the peanut? Goodness sake, it grows in the ground. Oh, but the salt. Salt's okay. What kind of oil? Oil, vegetable oil. He starts creating fantasies about how good the peanuts are going to be and how, and the shasa dechak, you can rely on the mekilim that he doesn't know about. And the peanuts are slowly getting closer and closer. So he's got nisyonis. He's feeling hungry. He's feeling tired. He's making bad choices. He didn't sleep well last night. Or they bring him his mahadrin, whatever you want to say, MH meal, and they put it down in front of him, and the steam is sort of blowing out the side. And he says to the stewardess, when did you open this? She said, I don't know, I can't remember. And she walks off. He's face to face with a dilemma. Does he say, well, Mistama, she's done this 1,000 times before, she wouldn't mess up my food, and I'm so hungry, and it looks good, it's okay, and probably we have some hetayrim. Before he knows it, knife and fork are out, and he's in a mokum of nisoyan. That's the life of a traveler. A traveler has tough choices. Now you'll say, well, those aren't the tough choices. Well, it seems that Midian knew what they were doing, and they came up with some pretty tough choices, and that's how the Kli Yakar explains it. So we should know we aren't alone in feeling tested when we go traveling. So today I'm going to speak about some new issues, some surprising things. One, you're going to say, how in the world does that fit in with holidays? In fact, you'll see actually it's going to sound like that, but we'll come back from it to some very Yesodistic ideas. So the surprising issue of traveling, this is the most important thing you should take out from the shir, and it was kedai to come just to hear this. What is it? Don't leave late on Friday. Because in my sefer there, I have a whole chapter, what happens when you get too close to your destination on Friday. And if you consider a car's combustion engine, and every time you put your foot on the accelerator, you're making sparks, there's an argument to be made that every second that you're driving, chas v'shalom, on Shabbos, you're involved in thousands and thousands of issa d'oraisa, and it's incredibly, incredibly chomor, and people can panic from it, and they don't want to get stuck. There's a place apparently outside of Gateshead where Bachrim one time got stuck on Shabbos before they got to town, and it's known as the place where the Bachrim slept in the fields, Ad Hayom. They say, this is the place where the Bachrim got stuck. They parked their car by the side of the road and they slept in the fields for Shabbos. But that's a godless. Not everybody can do that. Not everybody wants to. You know, you start thinking, well, which corn stack will I put my head on? And how exactly am I going to stay dry when it's raining on me? It's a very not geschmack matzav, especially if you have other people with you who aren't so hardy. So that's the thing I would say, that the most important lesson that I would recommend to take out of Hilchus holidays is don't leave late on Friday. You won't regret it. Okay, so now for a very strange story. A fellow came up to me and he said, I'm trying to book accommodations, and this year's been really hard. I don't know if you all have experienced this. Someone told me a story that they had booked a hostel well in advance. How do you book a hostel? A hostel's got 50 beds, and you're a family of, I don't know, six people. So the hostel said, well, because of the rules, the government rules, we can't rent it out to groups. We can't maintain social distancing. So we'll rent you six of the beds in the hostel, and your family can use it. But they didn't say, and not the other beds. They just said, well, those are the government rules. Roll the calendar forward a few months, and all of a sudden, the government changes the rules. And they say, actually, you can have in the hostel 50 people. So now they turn back to this nice Yiddish family and say, we're not going to say you don't have a booking with us. Of course you have a booking with us. You have a nice set of bunk beds, just like we promised you in this youth hostel. But the thing is, we're also going to rent it out to 40 whatever plus other people who want to stay in our hostel. So now imagine spending your summer holiday, you and your nice Yiddish family, amongst 40 young backpackers. Not exactly an ideal holiday. So people have gotten some very strange circumstances that they got stuck in. But this is even stranger still. A guy was looking through the various sites to try to find a holiday house, and this one looked a mitzia, because he's been looking for hours, and I know people who told me they spent hours and hours looking, and this one had the right number of beds, looked modern, it was out in the country, very isolated, and he thought, okay, that's fine, this we want, nice country holiday. And then at the bottom it said, and one additional feature that our house offers is our house has been checked out by paranormal experts with their equipment to be a bona fide ghost house. That was a promotional. Come and stay in the house that is a haunted house. They come in every month with their equipment and they check to see has anything been pushed off the shelf unexpectedly. I don't know what kind of equipment it is, but they're checking for ghosts. And this house very proudly says, yes, we have a haunted house and you can rent it. It's available. So most people, when you hear this, say, that is ridiculous. Who would want to stay in such a house? Right? Anybody here say, that's the house I've been looking for? Oh, there is somebody. Okay. But that's all you need. All you need is 1 in 50. And for 1 in 50, it's their dream house. And they'll pay. So although there are all sorts of strange things in the world, but there's a market for it. Pariah, if they were going to lose money, they wouldn't bother mentioning it. They know there's some mishugoyim out there who are looking for this kind of thing. So now, oh, sorry, it's only by implication. Yeah. I'm sorry, you were medayek my lashon too carefully. So, I've told this question to people, and someone in my family said, very interesting, Shaila, but who in the world is this relevant to? Like, who's booking such houses? So two stages. One, we're going to see that this whole inyan is a little bit relevant to things we might want to do on holiday. So there is benefit for everybody in that. And number two, it becomes a springboard to the bigger discussions of accommodations on holiday. So number one, how is it negeia to us? Well, let's say you're out somewhere in the countryside and you turn to your kids or your grandchildren, whatever it is, and say, let's go for a walk in the dark on a quiet country lane. And there aren't houses around for miles. So now you're walking in an isolated place late at night. And what do we know that there could be there in terms of Chazal, not ghosts, that's what the Goyim say? There could be Mazikim. Could be Mazikim hanging around. So you're saying to your kids, let's go for a walk in a quiet, isolated place. There's not light, there's not people, there's nobody here. And a good idea or not? I've seen also some places advertise, it may not be a house, but they say a haunted mine. The ghosts of the miners who died in the mine are still lurking around. And people like that kind of thing in this country. They're into spooky things. So now you think, well, that sounds interesting. Maybe I'll go into the mine with the ghosts. Why not? I've never been before, meet new kinds of creatures. So now, are you allowed to? Are there such things? So if you look in Orach Chaim, Siman Tzadi, the Mishnah Berurah, Yud Daled, says, generally speaking, you don't have to worry about it. He says, if you go out by yourself into a desert. Now remember, he's not writing for the generation of the Chachomim. He's writing the Mishnah Berurah for us. He didn't bother to mention this if it wasn't Nogea. I think that's a fair assumption. Maybe you could argue, but he seemingly is writing for us. And he says, if you go out by yourself, they may be mazik you. If you go out with two people, they may appear, but they won't be mazik. And then the thing that we're all hoping, if you go out with three, so then they don't even appear. So generally, when we go for a walk with our family, we could rustle up two other people to come with us. I don't know how many people like isolated walks in the dark in the countryside. Maybe some of you do. I'm not going to ask again because I'll get myself into trouble. But be that as it may, let's say, generally speaking, you have three people going a walk in the countryside, no problem. But the Mishnah Berurah adds some words that send shivers down your spine. That was for dramatic effect. So he says, but if the three, and they're common in that place, then they do come. So that means if we can figure out where a place they're common, then you can't say the Nomazikim there. Think back to our house. We have bona fide experts, whatever you'll call them, checking, and they have found them there regularly. So this is a house where they're common. The ghost, the mine with ghosts in, they probably saw it a few times. They're making claims, you know, they want to come up with something that has some basis, or maybe not. But so anyway, not every place can you quickly brush off as being not Shriach. Now, how did this all happen? The Gemara Psachim and Kuf Yud Beis Amud Beis says, the Chachamim didn't want the Mazikim to be hanging around, so they banished them further and further from the Yiddish Yeshuv. Abaye finally took it to the extreme, and he said, they have no business being around us at all. The problem is, when you push somebody hard enough, they don't listen anymore. So some of the Rishonim learn, he pushed them so hard that they came back. And some learn, no, Hitaka succeeded and they disappeared. But in any event, pardon the expression, it's not a dead issue to say that there is these mazikim and other things aren't hanging around. So now we're looking for a way to understand how we're getting on with life, where's our Yishuv Adas coming. So the Sefer calls Shmiras HaGufa and Nefesh, and he brings three reasons why we don't have to worry in daily life about mazikim. One, he says they're not shkiach, which we spoke about, so that's why here in MH we're generally not too scared about it. Another one is they hang around out of town. They don't like towns. It seems that's just not their favorite place, or maybe to do with the various decrees that the Chachamim made. And lastly, they don't like passers-by. They get spooked out by them. That was terrible, I'm sorry. So they get spooked themselves. They don't want to be where passers-by. Now, if you think back to our ghost house or the walk in the quiet lanes in the country, you don't have these things. Well, maybe you don't have the shchiach, but that you're out of town, and there are no passers-by. So you've got to be banking that it's a place that's not shchiach. So in this house, where they're telling you the shchiach, so how is it that you would be allowed to stay there? And you'd say, wait a minute, these are ghosts. These aren't mazikim. What's the big deal? So I agree. I have no idea. If we're talking about somebody walking around with a big white sheet on his head, rattling chains, well, Chazal give no basis for such an insanity. If that's what they're talking about, so then there's nothing there. There's somebody who needs to get his laundry done, that's all. But in the Sefer Shmiras HaGufa Nefesh, he says, Shin Dalads, Mazikim and Ruach Ra have major overlap in what they are. So let's suggest that perhaps, it's a suffix, we don't know what they are, but maybe they're Mazikim. So now, Who's telling us? Goyim. Goyim are telling us. They're saying, yeah, that's what we saw. Now, do we believe the Eidus of Goyim? We don't. That was a rhetorical question. We don't. We're not interested, really, in what they say. But maybe we'll say, it was a passing comment. Is this a passing comment, what you advertise? I don't think it's passing at all. They're trying to make money. You could say, well, they're going to lose customers. But like we pointed out, there's always one in a crowd who likes this kind of thing, who's going to spend his money on it, and they're going to get their money back. So it's not exactly Mesich Lefi Tumah at all. This is something they deliberately wrote, and the reason they wrote it is to attract attention and to get money. So let's say, just to make the case possible, you'd be in the petrol station there on the other side of the island listening to two goyim talking, and they say about this house as you're pulling up, they found ghosts there again. And they're not telling you. They don't even know you're listening. They're not the guys who own it. They're just making a passing comment one to the other. So then you could have basis to say we could possibly be relying on the words of these goyim. So let's say there's some possibility. Now, can we just brush it off as it's all a suffix? So I just point out, and this is where it gets a bit more nogea to the wider world of holidays, that Rav Mordechai Gross writes that it's not poshut to go on dangerous outings, because sakana is very chomor. So where does it come out? I'll give you some examples in a second. But if this is considered a sakana, so then who are you to say, I'll just take a chance, sounds like a nice house, let's go and hang around in a dangerous house. So some of the poskim say, ad kedei kach, that if you put yourself in a dangerous situation and then you need to say hagomel, you have no business saying hagomel. There are holidays where they take you on safari and they tell you you will not be inside a fenced off area, the animals will run wild. And yes, occasionally there are predators that come into the area you're staying, but don't worry, we have a man trained with a gun and he can defend you. But meanwhile, he can fall asleep as well, and the lion comes in and comes to inspect your shoes, and then he walks off. So you say, ah, hagoimel. No, not so pashit. Who asked you to put yourself inside the lion's den? So that's just one nafkamin of how far it goes, that sakana is not pashut to overlook. So I'll give you a tip as to how you can tell if something's dangerous. Have you ever seen when you go into an ice cream shop and you order a big chocolate ice cream, they say to you, before we serve this to you, we'd like you to sign a legal waiver that you if you get injured by this ice cream. Never happens, right? So why is it when you go up on the bungee cord tower, just before you start strapping yourself into harness, there's a guy there with a clipboard and says, please sign this waiver. What's he doing there? Isn't this just like eating ice cream? And so it's not just like eating ice cream. They would be closed down if everybody jumped off the bridges, didn't live to tell the story because the bungee cord snapped. That's true. But there have been plenty of stories of people who had neck injuries or had pain from it, and they don't want to be sued. There is a danger. So we don't have to define. I was speaking to Avram Gervitz a week ago, and I asked him about the mitzvah of guarding your health, and he said to me, guarding your health does not only include matters of life and death. It's also if a person would get seriously ill, seriously injured, or even less than that, that's included. So it's not all or nothing. So here we have people getting us to sign waivers. We should think twice. I signed a waiver once for my kids to ride on a horse, and I thought, a horse? How dangerous is a horse? Well, the answer is, Baruch Hashem, they didn't get hurt, but a horse is moving along, it's about 5 feet off the ground, and if the bozos, the clowns who put your child into the stirrups don't do it well, then they can quickly find themselves meeting the ground, and that is what happened. And they were lucky that they had got us to sign this waiver saying that we won't sue them, because they could have fallen the wrong way, and then we would have been on a trip to the hospital. Baruch Hashem, they didn't. Anyway, there are dangerous things out there, and it's not so poshut that a yid should just say, well, I'll take the chance, it looks like fun. Number two is who says that the hezek involved is the hezek of broken bones or something like that. It could be the hezek of mazikim is in ruchnius. We see that they do all sorts of strange things. If you go through some of the chazal, they wear out the garments of Talmid Chachamim. Well, right, what are they doing? Right. What shaychus? It's not exactly hezek, but it is a kind of hezek. It can be a hezek where a person forgets their learning, and here it comes, because I've introduced ghost stories, so I'll tell you a scary story. This happened right here in Salford, not more than a quarter of a mile from where we're sitting right now. So a friend of mine was moving into a new accommodation. I could probably tell you which street it is, but maybe one of you knows it and prefers not to have the publicity. Maybe you rent it out to people, so I won't say where it is exactly, but it's within a quarter of a mile. Anyway, the previous renters moved out and said, who should put on the mezuzahs, who should take the mezuzahs, whatever. It was all discussion. In the end, they decided that they would leave the mezuzahs to the new fellow moving in, even though maybe in halacha that wasn't the right thing, but that's what they agreed between them. I'm not going to go into hilchos mezuzahs. Anyway, the old renter moves out. A couple of weeks goes by, and he calls up my friend, and he says, just a reminder, did you deal with the mezuzahs? So he says, yeah, I'm going to deal with it. I'm going to. So he said, well, would you mind to deal with it today? So this is one renter to another renter. So he thinks a bit of a demand that. So he says, do you mind me asking, what's the big hurry? So he says, yeah, I'll tell you. So for the last few days, when my wife woke up in the morning, she found scratch marks on her. And now my children are also waking up with scratch marks. And we asked a bit, and we found that maybe it's to do with mezuzahs. So would you mind to please deal with it today? So my friend says to me, So I told him, yeah, I'll get on with it. So he says, but you know what I found really disturbing about the phone call? I said, no. He said, my wife woke up with scratch marks today as well. So here in Salford, we're not immune. Anyway, that was the ghost story, or whatever you want to call it, the Mazikim story. I shouldn't make light of Mazikim because they're serious business. But, okay. So that's this to bring out that it doesn't have to be all or nothing. It could be another kind of hezek. Now that we're on the subject of mezuzahs, I'll just point out that if you're renting a accommodation for less than 30 days, you're not mechuyev to put mezuzahs there, and certainly from goyim not. But people make the following mistake in logic. They say, just like I don't have to put mezuzahs up, it's not my house, it belongs to this goy, what does that have to do with me? But there's a different issur in the Torah, lo samed, don't leave dangerous things around the house. And now you're renting it for the week. That does have to do with you. You say, well, where does it come out? I was once in a holiday house. Maybe funny things happened to me. You're not so funny. One of my kids goes up to the top floor to where the cleaner's closet is, and the cleaner forgot to lock the closet with the padlock. So what does a seven-year-old do when you see an unlocked padlock? It's an invitation. Please come in. So in he went, and he comes down, and he says, Abba, I said, yes, I found something really interesting up in the loft. I said, what is it? He says, it's a gun. I said, oh, a toy gun, yeah, yeah. He said, no, it's a gun. So I go upstairs, and sure enough, there was a hunting rifle in this closet. Now, as far as I could tell, there was no ammunition in it. You know, I tried a few rounds. No, I'm just kidding. There's no ammunition, and I did what every clever father does when you find an unlocked padlock with a gun behind the door. You lock the padlock. And I went out, and we never saw the gun again. But the point was that this is your accommodations for the week. You were responsible. I was talking to XM girls, and I said to them, you may think you're just an XM girl. What does it have to do with me? And the answer is it does have to do. This isser is very nogea to whoever is responsible for the property. And there are other things that goyim don't consider dangerous that we would consider halachically an obligation to take care of. You can have patios with a big drop-off. And it's high enough that somebody maybe wouldn't notice it. It's worth a shaila. Am I supposed to put something there so that people don't accidentally walk off? Your guests are your responsibility, and it's something to take care of. Now, this is stage two to the story about the ghosts. So far, we've said maybe it's a sakana, maybe it's dangerous, maybe you should do something. Let's say, put that question aside. Let's say that it's... We're not worried about that for now. So what is there a bigger issue of? The bigger issue is that if you rent such a house, what do you think that you and your family are going to spend hours and hours every day talking about? Correct. That was the correct answer. Ghost, you're going to talk about ghosts. Just like this shiur, after I gave this shiur, I gave a shiur somewhere else, the people came up to me a week later and they said, I really enjoyed your shiur about ghosts. I said, actually, it was supposed to be to do with holidays. But the people get, it's just it's a mind captivating idea. So you're going to sit down, and your kids are going to say, what did you see? Did you hear that noise last night? Were you the one who turned on the light? It's going to go on and on. You're going to spend your whole week talking about things that are batsim tame, and that's a holiday. That's a Yiddish holiday. And if you think I'm taking it too far, in America, they have things called sports bars. A sports bar is, it's not just a place where they serve drinks and food. they've made it into a theme. Like we make themes for Purim, some people do anyway. So they make this restaurant into a theme. So it would be like you have the rugby championship, which they don't have rugby in America, but the equivalent. I'm not going to mention some other sports. But anyway, the rugby championship, and they say, you remember that player? You remember that game that they lost? This is the guy who dropped the ball, or whatever, however it goes on. So you spend your time in the restaurant talking about sports, shtusim. But that's what they want you to do. That keeps them entertained. Same thing. You come into the ghost house, and they've got pictures up, this thing, that thing, this report, that report. You spend your whole day with your mind filled with things that have nothing to do with, let's say, Yiddishkeit, certainly, and certainly close to talking about Tuma. So what does that have to do with us? None of us are renting this house. The answer is, and this is where we're heading with all of it, that is the same thing that can happen in a lot of houses, because the goyim, when they decorate their houses to make it an appealing place, they also want you to have a nice day, so they leave you lots of things to read. And one of the first things I do when I go into these houses is I quickly locate their bookshelf, take it everything that I possibly can, and you know the padlock? So I look for the place where the padlock is, because if I leave a bunch of teenagers to just peruse the books and see what's there, I'd say Rov Rubam is not suitable, if any, or there's probably none that's suitable, so you've got all the books. Now, that's if you're just talking about the Tamei Deka books. In America, it used to be, maybe they've become more politically correct now, every hotel room used to have a Bible next to wherever you would sleep. That was considered to be like Derech Eretz. You've given the people opportunity to say their nighttime prayers and to do whatever they're going to. But imagine, Chas v'Shalom, a Yiddish child picks it up and says, I never knew there was a part two. What's the news section? Say, there is no part two. That's where the fiction begins. There's the nonfiction, and then there's the fiction. But you don't want to get into the explanation of what it's doing all bound together. So the houses have things in them that the goyim are trying to make appealing to you. And they are Adarabba, many of them are also to us. And we have to clear out the house, go in with the eye looking that there are going to be problems here until we sort them out. Another thing is certain locations, and this is going to rub people the wrong way, because some of you may have enjoyed it, but when I went to Venice, I was naive, I thought it was just like a picturesque city to take my wife. But in fact, I felt I couldn't turn my head in any direction without seeing Yashka. It was gefährlich. I don't think we need to go into it. When I was in Switzerland, and I was walking up one of the mountain paths in the winter, and it was pounding with snow, and they had Yashka every 100 yards. They didn't even give him to keep him warm, hanging out there on his doing his acrobatics in the freezing cold. But I thought, they're ruining my holiday. I just want to go for a walk in the countryside. Why do I have to see this whatever is mushkes and their trefa ideas? Anyway, is that a holiday? Is that a Yiddish holiday? So we have to choose our destinations as well, very carefully. Now, so what are we supposed to do? So they've hung pictures up on the walls. I once was in a house where there was a painting up, which I thought, okay, it's just a painting. Like, I'm going to start fiddling around with it. After about the fourth day, I got a closer look at it, and I realized it was really unsuitable. They just painted in such a clever way that you didn't realize you were looking at a woman. So by the time I chopped what it was, so then I'm running around. I hope the kids hadn't had an eye for art. But the things that are hanging around, so what do? So you can cover them up if you're worried about damaging their property. Because not push it, even though they're doing things we don't accept, but to go and start damaging their property so to make it suitable, let's say I pull the picture off the wall. Or the course, students, I break the plasterwork. Well, I'm being mazik v'yadayim. So it's all. I'm not here to paskin halachas and chayshin mishpat, but to the best of my knowledge, that's asur. So you can cover them up. And befrat, we're talking about yashka, so you take a dish towel, preferably a dirty one, and you can hang it on them for the week. So somebody asked, this is a nice story about it, Adam Koshev. He said, talking about accommodations, he stayed once in a hotel room, and he'd been traveling, he should have been exhausted, and he travels to raise money for his moistus, and he couldn't sleep. He couldn't figure out why, like he should be exhausted. And then he realized, maybe it's just the fact that there's a television in the room. It's just staring me. So he went and took one of the towels, covered it up, and he fell asleep straight away. Okay, I could tell you who it is, but he's a shtickle makubal, and maybe he's sensitive to these things, but maybe we should all be. So the fellow who asked the question asked me something which I think didn't start, but it was an interesting question nevertheless. he said, well, maybe this house is a problem of Avodah Zorah. So I said, I asked around, is there any shaychus between what they call ghosts and Avodah Zorah? It seems there's no shaychus. But so we say, well, where's Avodah Zorah in England? It's a very irreligious country, and they don't leave the Bibles in the hotel room. So where is there a problem? So there is a problem, several of them, but one particularly famous one, ring of stones called Stonehenge. So what do they do there? So you say, well, it's a historic site where they did their ancient worship. Clerics danced around, did the sun worship, whatever it was. I'm sorry to tell everyone, if you had plans to go there, they still do it. Every year, they go in groups, and they still go and worship the sun there. Not shout that it's historical. Someone who I was talking to mentioned to someone else, didn't know about the Isser. It said, oh, I've always wanted to go there. So he said, well, you always want to go. They do Avodah Zorah there. He said, just because a bunch of goyim dance around, I have to worry about it? The answer is yes. Yes, that's how they do Avodah Zorah. Whatever you call dancing around, I don't know what they do, but that's what they call Avodah Zorah. The place is a mokum of Avodah Zorah. So you shouldn't be going there. And it's not just that place. There's several such stone arrangements around this country, and they're promoted as being of historic interest. And just be forewarned. And I'll finish with a very interesting shaila was asked to Rav Osner. The author of the Sefer Seder Yaakov, I think himself, he had the following situation. He went into to a hotel room, and there was Yashka, and he was very disgusted by it. So he decided what he's going to do is what would you do, folks? Anybody have a suggestion? What do? You're disgusted by...
Cover it up.
But what could you do?
Take it off.
Could take it off. Very carefully takes it off. So now, at the end of the week, he had the problem. What's he going to do? He's going to put it back up. So he called Rav Osner, and he asked him, this is what I've done. Am I allowed to put it back up? So Rav Osner answered him, B'shas d'chak, because it's chutz l'aretz, so you can be mekel. We don't have the same, the way the author of the Sefer read, he understood that in chutz l'aretz, we don't have the same chiyuv to destroy Avodah Zorah, as in Eretz Yisrael. So he understood that that was the basis for Rav Osner's psak, and he said, you can be mekel b'diyavid, because you've put yourself in this position, but I personally recommend the dirty tea towel. Keep well.
Hey.